Legacy. You started a war, and a lot of people are going to die because of it. Wedge's dark eyes blazed with intensity. Palpatine began the war. We're going to end it. The strength of the man's belief was slightly unnerving. Against the Empire? I'll grant you this much. You're brave, but you're fooling yourselves if you think you can take on a force like the Imperial Fleet and win. We destroyed the Death Star, didn't we? With a handful of single-pilot fighters. I flew on that mission, and I'm still here. A lot of Imperial officers can't say the same. Including some friends of mine, Thane said quietly. He hadn't been that close to Jude Edovan, but he remembered how kind she'd been, how bright. She deserved a longer life than that, and a better death. And the fellow officers he'd just begun to know, young guys like him who were starting their careers together. Sometimes their faces flashed through Thane's head at night when he was trying to sleep. Listen, I get why you did it. I know the Death Star had to be stopped, but don't fool yourself. That was bloody work.
I know, Wedge said quietly. It's like you said, the Death Star had to be stopped.
Just as the Empire must be destroyed. If that's going to happen, some of us have to get blood on our hands. We have to be willing to kill and willing to die. It's not easy, and it never will be, but I can tell you this much, Kyrell. It's easier than standing by and doing nothing. Thane remembered that day on Zidoing and the family he'd seen dragged away to prison. He'd felt so useless, so powerless. As long as he remained a refugee from the Empire, he would never again be able to act on his beliefs. He would never be able to stand up for anyone again. Unless he did not stand alone. Late that night, after hours of work, hours of more talking with Wedge, and a couple of Carillion ales, Thane returned to the Moa. He walked toward his bunk quietly, knowing both Methwat and Brill would be asleep. But Logara sat in the galley, munching on an enormous slab of cheese. "Hey," he said. "Can't sleep?" Logara admitted she'd woken up hungry, then said Thane looked worried. "Worried isn't exactly the word." The number of people he trusted enough to share this with could have been counted on one hand, with fingers left over, but Logara was among them. "Lieutenant Commander Antilles from the, unaffiliated group earlier today? He wants me to fly with them." That earned a roar of indignation. How dare that man try to steal her best pilot? Taking advantage of a crisis like that was unthinkable. She'd see to it that Thane got a raise, if that was what it took to keep him.
"No, no, Logara, you don't understand." Thane lowered his voice. "They're with the Rebellion."
She fell silent. Was that shock or disapproval? He leaned forward, trying to put his thoughts into words, not only for her sake, but also for his. "I never thought about joining the Rebellion. You know, I understood the Empire was corrupt, but I thought so was the old Republic by the end. So would be whatever other government might follow. I told myself it was all the same, but what I've seen these past several months, it goes beyond corruption. The Empire wrecks worlds and enslaves entire species and doesn't give a damn about anyone under its rule. I mean, as rich as Coruscant is, they couldn't send any humanitarian aid here?" Logara quietly said the need on Ulan was great. "Exactly. The Empire didn't come here, but the rebels did. These guys are fighting a war, always on the run, and they still shared their supplies." None of it made sense to Thane. Most people didn't do the right thing even when they weren't in danger, but he'd learned from Sienna that there were actually a few idealists out there. He continued, "This girl I knew believed the Empire would never destroy another world once the Rebellion had been defeated, but that's because she's so good. She can't even recognize evil when it's staring her in the face. I mean, why would the Empire go to the trouble of building a space station that could destroy planets if it wasn't going to use it? And if the Empire would do that, there's nothing it wouldn't do." Thane straightened and took a deep breath. "I don't know what comes after the Empire. I can't say that whoever gets power next will be any better, but it can't get any worse. That's not possible. If there's even a chance I can do something that helps take the Empire down, I feel like I have to do it."
After a long moment, Logara quietly said that her own people had been enslaved by the Empire. Kashyyyk had been such a beautiful place when she was young. Now it had been turned into a hell. She found it difficult to speak of her home world's tragedy, but she never forgot it. Thane thought about the sheer level of brutality necessary to conquer a species as powerful as the Wookiees. "Is this your way of telling me you're joining the rebellion too?" She shook her head. The Moa was hardly in shape to haul cargo, much less go into battle. And for Bryl and Methwat, it was not only a ship, but also their home. A decision to join the rebellion would have to be unanimous, and Logara felt Thane knew, as well as she did, that they weren't there yet. That was true. But we could put in somewhere, refurbish the ship, talk to the others. Nobody here has any love for the Empire. In a month or two, I bet we could bring him around. Probably, Logara admitted. After a pause, she asked if he wanted to wait to join the rebellion, if he wasn't ready right away. Thane flushed. I'm not a coward. Her massive hand petted his head. Logara knew he was brave. Yet she also suspected Thane had other reasons to hesitate. All those months, Thane had tried so hard to keep his past and his feelings to himself. He should have known his captain was too perceptive not to guess at some of the truth. It's just that I used to serve in the Imperial Starfleet. A lot of my friends and classmates are still with the Empire, including someone who means a lot to me. On some level, attacking the Empire feels like attacking them. Logara pointed out he had accepted the risks of combat when he joined the Imperial fleet, and so had everyone else. Yeah, I know. He leaned back in the creaky seat and took a deep breath. But joining the rebellion, leaving the Empire is one thing, but taking up arms against it is another. The friends I served with before would never forgive that. Especially the woman I was telling you about, Sienna. She'd never speak to me again if she knew. Not that she's likely to anyway, I guess. With a soft whine, Logara told him the Force had a way of bringing people together when the time was right. Oh, great. The Force. My best bet is this crazy magic old Valley kindred still believe in? But Thane said nothing, knowing Logara's beliefs were important to her. Instead, he asked, Is this your way of saying it's all right for me to go? Since the Force will make sure we meet again? His answer came in the form of a big hug that enveloped him in white fur. As he hugged Logara back, she told him to promise her he would eat well. He had to laugh. I promise. I'm really doing it, he thought. It still seemed unreal. I'm going to war against the Empire. I'm joining the Rebel Alliance. Chapter 15. Your service these past 2 years has been exemplary, Lieutenant Commander Rhee. Sienna stood at attention in front of Admiral Ozzel, hands held firmly at her sides. Junior officers did not make eye contact with superiors during evaluations, so she stared fixedly at the metal-tiled wall behind him.
You frequently volunteer for extra shifts or to help train newer officers on Star Destroyer protocols. Aside from the unfortunate incident on Ivarujar, you have received no punishments or reprimands, and it does not escape my notice that your offense then has never been repeated. You've never even been admonished about your uniform.
The leather bracelet she carried for Wynette remained in its cloth pouch in her pocket. No regulation said she couldn't keep something in her pocket.
You were transferred to the Executor from the Devastator at the request of Lord Vader himself. A high honor indeed.
Sienna did not respond. Privately, she thought Vader's request had been more threat than reward. She had seen him adrift in space, nearly helpless. He would not want anyone to think of him as vulnerable in any way, so he had to remind Sienna that she remained forever vulnerable to him.
Ozzel continued, Although you are far too senior for TIE fighter duty, you put in the simulator time to make sure your piloting instincts stay sharp.
Sienna decided she could speak.
We never know what a crisis may demand of us, sir.
She also loved flying for its own sake, and sometimes dreamed all night of swooping through the canyons of Jellucan with Thane by her side. But it wasn't against regulations to love what she did, or to remember what she had lost.
"Very well said." Admiral Ozzel came as close to smiling as she'd ever seen from him. "In short, Lieutenant Commander Ree, your performance aboard the Executor exceeds expectations on every point. Keep this up, and you'll make Commander before long."
Commander? Cyana wasn't as wrapped up in the idea of advancement as she had been 3 years ago, but she could take satisfaction in having done her duty so well. Even with the unnaturally fast rate of promotion following the Death Star's destruction, making Commander less than 5 years out of the Academy was a major achievement.
"Yes, sir! Thank you, sir!"
Afterward, as she walked through the dark metal corridors of the Executor, she mulled over her likely promotion. It ought to have been cause for celebration. She should have messaged Nash and Barriss immediately, telling them to meet her later for a cup or two of ale. Instead, the praise from her superior officer only reminded her of how she had failed the Empire once, when she had lied to protect a friend. Worst of all, Cyana knew if she had to make the same choice again, she would still pick Thane. As she walked past one of the observation decks, she looked out at the stars and wondered where he might be. Surely he'd left Jellucan as she'd told him to do. Their world was dangerous for him. Those snakes he called family would turn him in for a two-credit piece. Yet Cyana remained haunted by the vision of Thane trapped where she'd seen him last, broke, stuck in a tiny room above a seedy Valencia bar with that lost look in his blue eyes. "Stop it," she told herself. "Thane's smart. He's a talented pilot. By now, surely he's found work and a good place to live. Probably he's happy. You're not small enough to begrudge Thane a happy life without you, right?" Cyana straightened up and smoothed her hands down the front of her uniform jacket. The shadowy reflection she saw silhouetted against the stars in the window was once again that of the perfect Imperial officer. The excellence of her service had long since ceased to be only a matter of honoring her oath. She also thought of it as the price she paid for giving Thane his freedom. No one would ever be able to say she hadn't paid in full. "I know. I'll tell Mama and Papa I might be promoted." Most Imperial officers limited their messages to and from home as a symbol of their commitment. But Cyana figured that was easier for people from core worlds, who could expect to see their families in person more than once every 5 years. She still communicated with her family at least once a 10-day, telling them about everything from grav ball tournaments to Barriss's jokes. Well, the jokes that were repeatable. The only subject her family never discussed was Thane Kyrell. Cyana didn't want to lie to her parents about him. Also, she knew they'd realize she was lying right away. The fewer people who suspected the truth about Thane, the better. Her parents always seemed happy to receive her messages, especially Mama. But lately, Cyana had begun to notice that their replies were almost entirely about her life, not theirs. They no longer knew all the valley gossip, or no longer cared to share it. Mama would sometimes speak about her supervisory job at the mine, but over the years, her tone had shifted from pride to a matter-of-fact weariness. Maybe that was only natural, but Cyana couldn't help noticing it. As well as the fact that her father rarely mentioned anything about his own life or the Greater Valley at all. "There you are," said a pleasant, cultured male voice. Cyana turned to see Lieutenant Nash Windrider, walking toward her with a slight smile on his face. During the 3 years since Alderaan's destruction, he had gradually recovered some of his old wit and dash. No, he would never be the same again, but she no longer saw the terrible shadows under his eyes that had scared her so in the beginning. Both he and her friend Barriss Sai had been transferred from the Devastator to the Executor when Darth Vader chose it as his new flagship. They were also posted to the same quadrant within the vessel, so she saw them often. "I've been looking for you, Cyana."
"Why? Is this about Barriss's birthday?"
Cyana folded her arms and glared at him.
"You ruined the surprise, didn't you? You don't give me nearly enough credit, either for my expertise with surprise parties, which is considerable, or for knowing what's important enough to merit pulling you back onto the bridge when you're off duty."
The hairs on the back of her neck prickled with a sense of both danger and excitement.
What?
One of the probe droids picked up a very interesting signal on the ice world of Hoth, Nash said with relish.
We may have finally located the rebel base.
Sienna sucked in a sharp breath.
And we're going in?
Nash's grin widened, with 5 Imperial-class Star Destroyers by our side. The image of Jude's smile flashed through Sienna's mind. At last, they had a chance to avenge themselves on the people who had destroyed the Death Star and murdered her best friend, and to stamp out the rebellion once and for all.
Thane groaned as they opened the bay doors again, and a blast of frigid air swept past them.
I'm going to freeze my chubies off!
The guy showing him around, Dak Ralter, laughed as he unsaddled another of the Tauntauns.
There are easier ways to switch genders, you know.
I didn't mean I wanted to freeze them off. I just meant it's so cold.
After a childhood spent in the high mountains of Jellucan, Thane had thought he knew how to handle being cold. But Hoth was on another scale together.
Don't talk about it. Don't even think about it, Dak said earnestly. Just keep your pants on and focus on the big picture.
I know. We made our base on this frozen hunk of rock because the Empire would never think to look here.
Because who in their right mind would subject themselves to this?
Thane's gesture took in the ice walls of their base, the bitter chill that pierced to the bone, and the pungent odor of the Tauntauns they were currently freeing.
Nobody could ever say we joined the rebellion for the fun of it.
Nobody would say that.
Dak Ralter's face fell as if somebody really had accused them of fighting a war just for kicks.
Or they better not. Anybody who doesn't think we need to stand up to the Empire...
Take it easy. I was just joking.
Dak shot Thane a reproving look, as if to say this war was far too serious for anything as lowbrow as humor. Some of the new recruits were like that at first, so idealistic that spending time with them felt like biting into pure sugar. Or so the long-timers said. Thane outranked Dak by a grand total of 3 weeks, but he felt like he was 2 decades older than Dak, rather than 2 years. Thane had never been one of the idealists. He'd accepted Wedge Antilles' invitation not because he believed the rebellion was pure good, but because he'd learned the Empire was pure evil. Even for him, though, the adjustment felt strange. Small as the MOA was, every crew member lived in a private cabin of his or her very own. Even in Imperial service, he'd never had to bunk with more than 7 other guys. In the rebellion, Thane slept in an enormous bunker with a couple 100 other people, the majority of whom seemed to snore. Rations were scanty, the odds terrible, and the risks even greater than Thane would have imagined, and so far he'd been in none of the epic battles he'd been anticipating. Instead, he had made a few supply runs while avoiding Imperial border controls. He'd helped set up the Hoth base, and now here he was taking it down again, setting their pack creatures loose so they'd be long gone by the time the Empire arrived. Because apparently a probe droid had found them already.
They'd just gotten set up on Hoth, too.
He half wanted to ask Rebel Command how they were supposed to win a war when the Empire could find the Rebel bases within a month. He looked over the back of the grunting Tauntaun nearest him to take in the entire base around him. Mechanics worked feverishly on fighters, their bluish-white welding torches lighting the murky repair bay. Princess Leia spoke intently to General Ryken. Her intensity obvious even at that distance, Thane thought. They'd passed each other in corridors twice without her recognizing him from that long-ago dance. Droids whirred through the fray as non-combat personnel ran for the first transports. Boarding had begun already. Thane knew only that his group, Corona Squadron, wasn't up yet. For now, he just had to keep freeing smelly Tauntauns. Dak's chatter broke his reverie.
I still can't believe I got assigned as gunner to Luke Skywalker. The guy who single-handedly destroyed the Death Star. Somebody's going to be his gunner. Might as well be you.
Thane was mostly glad it wasn't him. Yes, Skywalker had shown incredible courage and made a near impossible shot. He deserved respect. But that particular act of heroism was one Thane preferred to admire from a distance.
And they say he hopes to become a Jedi Knight, just like in the olden days, Dak continued, talking as dreamily as a school kid with a crush. Do you know he has a real, true lightsaber? He even learned how to use the Force from the great General Kenobi, the last of the Jedi. It was all Thane could do not to groan. Please, not more superstitious nonsense about the Force. In his opinion, the rebel troops needed to be motivated by the harsh truth about the Empire, not crazy religious beliefs. Then he remembered Sienna's voice so vividly that it was as if she'd whispered in his ear. Believing in something greater than ourselves isn't crazy. It's proof we're sane. Look how vast the galaxy is. Don't you have to admit we can't be the greatest power within it? She had said that to him during one of their final days on Jellocan, before they left for the Academy. He'd laughed at her for suggesting that maybe the Force had made sure they went to the same school on Coruscant, to keep them together. By now, even Sienna would have to admit they weren't lucky enough to share a destiny. So why was the memory of her still more real to him than the person actually standing a meter away? Let's just get this done, all right? We don't want to run off and leave these things to starve pinned up in here. Thane patted one tauntaun on the nose before slipping off its halter. The beast bounded away, eager to find a pack and burrow down for warmth. We have to haul out of here within the day, Ryken says. I don't want to get stranded on Hoth because we didn't finish tauntaun duty in time. Sorry, Dak said so earnestly that Thane felt a twinge of guilt. So he gentled his tone. By the way, you must have impressed somebody to get assigned to fly with Skywalker. They wouldn't pair him up with just anyone. Really? Definitely. He glanced over at Dak and saw that the kid was smiling. With that, they cleared the stall of the final two tauntauns. As the beasts ran into the snow, leaving only their stink behind, every siren on the base went off at once. The shrieking echoed within the cave walls. Thane jerked upright and dropped the harnesses within the first second. Dak yelled, "What does this mean?" As green as he was, Dak knew the answer. He just didn't want to believe it. Thane shouted over the din, "The Empire got here faster than we thought! They've found us!" After a quick briefing from Princess Leia, it only took Thane 4 minutes to suit up and run to his snowspeeder. 4 minutes was almost too long.
"Haul your Jellucani ass up here!" shouted Yendor, Thane's Twi'lek co-pilot and a fellow member of Corona Squadron. He'd already donned his specially fitted helmet, which allowed his blue leku to trail down his back. "We've got multiple Imperial walkers marching in!"
"I trained on walkers at the Academy!" Thane swung in his seat. Even as he put his helmet on, the overhead canopy descended and locked.
"I know them inside and out! What can you tell me about these things?"
Yendor flipped the switches that would prepare them for takeoff. "They're the most heavily armored ground vehicles in the Imperial Army."
"So what you're saying is that you have a thorough knowledge of just how screwed we are."
"Pretty much," Thane said. "Look at it this way. If even the Death Star could fall, there's nothing the Empire has that we can't take down."
Yendor released the clamps. "Let's test that theory."
Thane put his hands to the controls and felt the engine surge to life beneath him.
"Here we go!"
The snowspeeder shot out of the base and into the fray. Laser bolts striped the silver-white sky, and rebel ships scattered wide to face the intruding army, because that's what they had here, not a strike team. They were up against the full ground forces of this empire, at least. "How many snowtroopers are down there?" Thane wondered. "And they'll probably send flame troopers into the base to burn everything still inside, and everyone." Worst of all, he could already see 5 AT-AT walkers on the horizon. Each one would carry dozens of soldiers and countless armaments, not to mention the deadly cannons mounted in front. It wouldn't matter how far the walkers made it if the rebels could just get the transports away, Thane reminded himself. Actually, destroying one of those monsters would be a bonus. Yendor said,
"Did your classes at the Academy tell you how to deal with the walkers' heavy armor? Because our blasters aren't worth a damn against these things."
Thane took the speeder in fast and low, sending flurries of snow out in a plume beneath them. Not every place can be fully armored. Think about it. The legs are vulnerable exactly where any creature's legs would be.
Gotcha,
Yender replied.
Targeting the joints.
The entire snow speeder vibrated with the power of the fire they shot at one of the walkers. Specifically, its ankles. While their blasters didn't have the strength to destroy those alloys, it might be possible to weaken the bolts and fry some of the circuitry. We can make them unstable, slow them down, anything to help the transports get to safety. Each of those transports would contain nearly 100 rebel soldiers, the heart of their fleet. If the Empire triumphed today, it truly could be the end of the rebellion. But Yendor's aim was sure and steady. He kept hitting the AT-AT's lowest joints in the exact same spots, maximizing the damage. As Thane zoomed in with his sensors, he realized they even had a chance to take one of the feet off the thing, which would stop it dead.
Keep it up! Thane shouted to Yendor. I'm taking us all the way in! I can actually target quite well from a distance, you know.
Yender joked, even as he started firing faster. By then, the lowest section of the walker loomed large in the view screen. Thane looked upward to see the thing for real. At first, he wished he hadn't. The monsters looked big enough when you were in them. But from below, they seemed to outweigh the entire sky. But then he told himself, they're not as big as the mountains back home. You flew through those, you can make it through these. So he accelerated until the snowy landscape was no more than a blur, bringing them back in as fast as possible. Yender kept firing with pinpoint accuracy, every hit now winning a puff of black smoke or a shower of sparks. They were within 200 meters, 100 meters. Thane made the decision in an instant. At the last second, he could have swerved. He didn't. Yendor yelped, still firing, as Thane steered their snowspeeder directly at the AT-AT's feet. In the final moments before impact, he jerked the speeder sideways until it was perpendicular to the ground, sliding between the AT-AT's legs until he spun out behind it, still in one piece. That was more than he could say for the walker, now hobbling on burning, damaged feet. One of the legs lifted, minus its foot, then froze. That AT-AT wasn't going anywhere.
So that was not a suicide run? Yendor said.
Thane laughed as he took the snowspeeder around for another pass.
I used to turn side slips like that through mountain stalactites every day back home. You were safe as a baby the whole time. Remind me never to hire you as a babysitter.
As Thane zoomed back toward the conflict, he realized that somebody else had managed to bring a walker down. As in, all the way down, flat in the snow. The head blew as he watched, a cough of black smoke against the white ground. For a moment, he imagined himself inside the walker. It would have been so unbearably hot just before the explosion. The heat must have cooked those guys in their armor.
That's right, he told himself savagely. We're here to kill them just like they're here to kill us. Better them than you.
Yendor said,
Got word from Commander Skywalker. They looped the walker's legs with a tow cable.
That's faster, Thane said, and saves our energy for later.
And doesn't make us do that damned death somersault thing. Don't knock the move that just saved our butts, Thane said as he headed straight for the next walker. Just get the tow cable ready.
As they sped back into the thick of the battle, Thane saw a transport rocket through the atmosphere, preparing for its leap into hyperspace. Were they actually going to escape this mess after all? Some of them would. But there were crashed snowspeeders lying on the ground, cinders blowing in the wind around them. No matter how many transports got away, the rebellion had to leave behind a tremendous amount of ships and material. And all that work that had gone into building the base had been wasted. Now they'd have to wander through the galaxy again, looking for some place even more obscure and unlivable than Hoth, if such a planet even existed. Maybe the Rebellion brass had a long-range plan that would render the day's battle meaningless, but for now, the Empire was making them pay dearly for their defiance. Thane gritted his teeth. The larger strategy of the Rebellion wasn't up to him. He had one job only, to cover the transports.
For the next long while, he allowed himself to think of nothing but the targets, to do nothing but fly in as close as possible so Yendor could make every shot. The ground troops beneath their speeder were sometimes no more than shadows, their white snowtrooper armor rendering them almost invisible against the wintry landscape. Once the last walker went down, the other rebels cheered. Thane stared up at the bleak sky above them. What are they going to send down next? Nothing came. No more Imperial ships descended. That meant they were waiting above the atmosphere to pick off the rebel fighters one by one. The moment the final transport streaked into the sky, Thane and Yendor rushed their snowspeeder back to base. By now, they had mere minutes to get their individual starfighters off the ground. All Thane had to do was fly safely out of planetary atmosphere before going to light speed. But first, he had to outrun the TIE fighters that had just zoomed into range. Damn! If he'd taken off 5 minutes earlier, the TIEs would have missed him entirely. Now Thane would have to shoot his way to freedom. But TIE fighters weren't as sturdy as walkers. They provided almost no protection for their pilots, which was the main reason why being a TIE pilot was so revered in the Imperial Starfleet. Flying one of those things took guts. Knowing that didn't make it easier for Thane to shoot the TIE fighters down, but he did it anyway. As his blaster bolts raked across one of the TIEs, a shower of green sparks flumed into the air. And then the ship was spiraling down, wings clipped, falling to its doom. Thane had experienced that in TIE fighter simulators. He knew what it looked like from the inside. This was a war. They'd all chosen their sides. So Thane accelerated upward, not bothering to watch on sensors as the TIE fighter crashed to the ground. As soon as the space outside his X-Wing had turned black and the sensors showed all clear, he laid in a course for the rendezvous coordinates and prepared for the leap to light speed. Only in the last moments did he see the Imperial fleet amassed off his starboard side, so enormous that even the darkness of space did not dwarf it. There was no time to study it in detail. Hardly even a flash of silver before the stars changed from points into a tunnel, and his engines whined as his ship leaped into light speed. Thane felt as if he couldn't breathe. He knew what he'd seen in that final split-second view of the Imperial fleet. A superstar destroyer. When I left, Sienna was assigned to the Devastator. They'd never post her to any ship smaller than a Star Destroyer again. By now, she probably isn't assigned on TIE patrols very often, but she could be. And she'd volunteer just for the joy of flying. He was being ridiculous. Of the many Star Destroyers under the Emperor's control, what were the odds that a particular one would be assigned to that battle on that day? But however remote the chances were, the possibility was real. And now, sickened by fear, Thane realized the TIE pilot he'd just killed could have been Sienna. It was no less likely to be her than any other pilot in the fleet. If so, he hadn't even bothered to watch her die. The worst part was that he would never know. Chapter 16. The metallic rasp of Lord Vader's breathing echoed throughout the Executor's bridge. Sienna knew better than to glance upward or give any other indication that she even realized he was there, standing on the higher level only a couple meters above. Although she didn't believe some of the wilder rumors about Darth Vader's vindictiveness, by now she knew it was wisest not to draw his attention for any reason. His rages when he was displeased were legendary. Right now, he had to be displeased in the extreme. How could so many rebel transports have gotten away? Even coming out of hyperspace too early shouldn't have undermined their entire attack. The Imperial Starfleet had sent down a strike force that should have been able to paralyze the enemy's defenses. But instead of victory, they had 3 demolished AT-ATs, 1 badly damaged one, several dozen destroyed TIE fighters, and several hundred dead snowtroopers. The high number of rebel casualties they'd inflicted was small consolation. Later, Sienna resolved, she would watch the recordings of the Battle of Hoth and study the rebels' tactics in detail. The Empire possessed every advantage in terms of manpower and firepower. Today ought to have been the day they dealt the rebellion a final, fatal blow. Instead, their victory was incomplete.
If the rebels could avoid being completely crushed by an Imperial strike force led by 6 Star Destroyers, then superior or at least surprising tactical moves had to be the reason. Analyzing those in greater depth might give the Imperials the information they needed to finally end this gruesome war. For now, though, Sienna and everyone else on the Executor had another, far more vital priority. Capture the Millennium Falcon. If anyone on the bridge understood why it was so important to catch that antique piece of junk, nobody said so. Lord Vader wanted the ship towed aboard and its passengers taken alive. So instead of simply blowing up the Millennium Falcon, something they could have done in an instant, they had to try to pluck it from the sky. Unfortunately, whoever was steering the Falcon was one hell of a pilot. He'd gone into an asteroid field, apparently choosing suicide over capture. No small ship could hope to emerge from an asteroid field intact. The rebel ship at least had shields. TIE fighters didn't even have that much protection. Yet 4 of them had been sent in. While Sienna sat there trying to fathom the purpose of that suicide mission, Captain Piet said, "Re, provide auxiliary navigational assistance." Her heart sank even as she said, "Yes, sir." She went to the Oxnav post in the data pit and looked down at the 4 screens that showed her the TIE fighters' designations and coordinates. Any assistance she could provide would be minimal, but if she could give those pilots a chance, she would. Her fingers flew as she set the triangulations between their ships and the Millennium Falcon, and then she yanked on the headset that would let her talk to the pilots directly. OL-701, adjust 37 degrees starboard and down. NA-811, follow but go up. NA-811 was a guy called Penry, whom she talked to once in a while, a graduate of the Academy on Lothal. When he laughed, no one could help laughing with him, and since he seemed to find everybody's jokes hilarious, the laughter was constant. Although Penry was a couple of years her senior, he sounded younger as he said, "Affirmative. CR-978, pull up! Pull up!" But Sienna's order had come too late. One of the TIE fighters vanished from the grid. That was one dead man on her watch. Please, no more. OL-701, new trajectory, linking to your nav computer now.
Got it.
JA-189, your computer isn't linking up.
I can't.
Then a burst of static accompanied the wild spinning of another TIE on her screen grid.
Oh, clipped one of my engines. Can't steer. Need a tractor.
Louder static was followed by silence as the image of JA-189's TIE fighter faded away for good. Sweat made Sienna's gray jumpsuit stick to her skin. She kept her eyes locked on the grid and her voice as even as she could manage.
OL-701, NA-811, you're getting in really close to one of the larger asteroids.
Target seems to be looking for cover. We're on him!
That was OL-701. Through the NA-811 uplink, Sienna heard only breathing that was too shallow, too quick. Penry had just seen 2 other pilots explode in front of his eyes. To Captain Piet, she said, "Sir, if the Millennium Falcon lands on a larger asteroid, we could focus our laser cannons on that and blow it away. We'd take the Falcon out in the process. Can I order the TIE fighters back?" Piet stood very still, obviously waiting for Lord Vader to countermand the order. Vader said nothing. He didn't even turn around. Finally, Piet said, "Very well, Ri." Hope rushed through her. At least she could save 2 of the pilots.
NA-811, OL-701, abort pursuit. Chart your safest course back and...
"He's in one of the canyons,"
OL-701 replied.
"We've almost got him."
Sienna waited to hear from Penry. Instead, he screamed, a terrible, short sound cut off too soon. In that instant, both of the remaining TIE fighters disappeared from her view screen, leaving it dark. 4 pilots dead, and it was partly her responsibility. Would Piet reprimand her? Worse, would Vader? What if those rumors were true, about how Vader treated those who displeased him? But nobody paid any attention to her. Piet and Vader acted as if she hadn't let anyone down, as if 4 loyal officers hadn't just died for no reason. There was nothing for Sienna to do but to return to her usual station and go back to monitoring the situation. To the commander who sat beside her in the data pit, she whispered, "Why aren't we at least firing on the asteroid?"
"No clear shot. The target could just as easily have changed course. We no longer have it on visuals or sensors."
A wave of nausea swept through her. Those four TIE fighter pilots had died for nothing. No one would ever hear Penry's laugh again. In command track courses at the academy, the teachers had counseled them that they couldn't think of their troops as individuals. To do so would lead only to hesitation and thus defeat. They protected their people by forgetting they were people, instead viewing them as pieces in a vast, elaborate game. It was the only element of command track training that had ever given Cyan a pause. She knew now that she would never be able to do that, not the way Piet and Vader did. Yet Vader could not have been totally devoid of emotion, because he then, unbelievably, ordered the Executor into the asteroid field too. Impacts began to send shudders throughout the ship. Cyana winced as if the damages were actual injuries to her body. What Star Destroyers had in sheer power, they lacked in maneuverability. They would take countless hits today. What registered as minor damage on a Super Star Destroyer could mean the demolition of two entire decks down for a few thousand meters, and all the people stationed on those decks. More officers and stormtroopers would die needlessly, all because Lord Vader couldn't let one ratty old ship go. No, Cyana reminded herself sternly. The deaths she'd seen that day, the useless risk and damage, that was all because the Rebel Alliance had started a war. When her shift ended, Cyana stood to go and winced. Every muscle in her body had tensed so badly during the TIE fighter flights through the asteroid field that she felt as sore as if she'd run 30 kilometers. The doors slid open to let her walk out, or as it turned out, to let Piet return. Immediately, she stood at attention, awaiting the reprimand she no doubt deserved. Piet said only, "Well done today, Lieutenant Commander."
But was he thinking of someone else? "I lost all four pilots, sir."
"They had no chance, really.
You kept them alive longer than they could have made it on their own."
He was telling her she'd done a good job. On one level, she understood why he said so, but it didn't change how wretched she felt. There was nothing else for her to say, though, except, "Thank you, Captain."
"Oh, yes. You weren't on the bridge yet. For when..."
Piet drew himself up.
"I have been promoted to Admiral, effective immediately, assuming Admiral Ozzel's command."
What happened to Admiral Ozzel? The question died on her lips. In the Imperial Starfleet, sometimes it was better to be able to believe you didn't know the answer.
"Yes, Admiral. Congratulations."
Piet's expression looked bleak.
"That will be all, Rhee."
With that, he returned to the bridge, the black doors sliding shut behind him. Cyana felt too exhausted to move, much less put in extra hours. Yet instead of returning to her bunk, she went to a spare analysis booth and pulled up all the footage from the Battle of Hoth available to someone at her clearance level. She intended to go over every single second of it until she figured out how a bunch of poorly armed, ragtag rebels were outwitting the greatest military force the galaxy had ever seen. Was it arrogance to think she could come up with an answer that had eluded the Admiralty's finest tactical minds? No, she realized. It was desperation. She wanted this war to end, needed it to end, so that the bloody, merciless methods of war would end too. Strong as she was, determined as she was to see this through, Cyana knew she couldn't endure years more of sending people to futile, meaningless deaths. It's not like Penry and I were friends, but he was more than a call number. I remember his laugh, his birthmark. So I can't forget that he was human, that somewhere out there he has a mother and father who want him home. When they hear the truth, it will destroy them. As surely as it will destroy Mama and Papa if I die during my service. That's just one little tragedy. Multiply that anguish and loss by the billions of people already dead in this war, and it's unbearable. Whenever Cyana spoke in her head like that, she always envisioned the same listener. If only she could talk to Thane for real. He would know how to advise her, how to comfort her.
even if he could do nothing else, he would have taken her in his arms and let her hold on tightly until the worst of the pain had ebbed away. Sometimes she couldn't fall asleep without imagining the one night she and Thane had spent together. Not the sex, well, not only the sex, but the afterglow. The way he had tenderly kissed her hair and curled his body against hers. She couldn't remember any other time she had felt so safe and warm. Sienna bit her lower lip. The pain brought her back to the here and now. Every few months, she resolved not to think about Thane ever again. He had chosen his path. Wherever he was in the galaxy, she hoped he was well and happy. She would never know for sure and needed to make her peace with that. "So concentrate on what you're doing," she told herself. Sienna began playing back the Hoth footage, taking notes on her datapad the whole time. "Abandoned snowspeeders means they lost ships and valuable material when we ran them off. Possible to simply chase them until resources run out? War of attrition?" And the next footage showed the Rebel laser cannons. The armaments themselves were a match for Imperial standards, or very nearly, but inadequate body armor for soldiers appears to be standard throughout the Rebel forces. Look at weapons that expel shrapnel. Possibly razor-edged microdroids? Next was footage of the destruction of the Imperial walkers. Sienna could have groaned when she saw how easily the harpoons and tow lines took the first AT-AT down. Surely there had to be some kind of defense they could install for that. The second one seemed to explode from inside, so that was probably the Imperials' fault rather than the Rebels. "Mechanical malfunction? A possible saboteur?" she jotted. And then another walker fell prey to a Rebel pilot who somehow knew one of the only vulnerable spots in the armor. Her mind went blank. The beeping and buzzing of the computers around her turned into so much white noise. Astonishment and betrayal rippled through her like an earthquake and its aftershocks. But Sienna shook her head. "I imagined it. Must have. Because there's no way." Quickly, she put the footage back in and watched again. She hadn't imagined it. The Rebel snowspeeder kept firing at the ideal targets on the lowest joints of the walker's legs as it zoomed forward at suicidal speed. Then, at the very last moment, it spun sideways through the narrow gap that led to safety. Just like flying through the stalactites back home. Any number of pilots in the galaxy must have learned that move. Sienna knew that. But it didn't change what she was absolutely sure she had just seen. Thane Kyrell had joined the rebellion. Chapter 17. Thane went through the motions as blankly and automatically as his astromech droid. Reached rendezvous point. Input codes to receive location of the next rendezvous point. Leap into hyperspace again and finally connect with their new base ship. The Mon Calamari cruiser, Liberty. The Liberty was far larger and more sophisticated than most of the vessels in the motley Rebel fleet. However, it was designed for the comfort of the Mon Calamari, not humans. Temperatures were higher, and the humidity in the air was so intense, Thane's skin grew damp within minutes. He needed some distraction from the discomfort, Thane decided. Better not to be alone with his thoughts, anyway. He kept seeing that TIE fighter tumble down, kept imagining Sienna dying in the heart of it, and he had to stop that somehow. First, he sought out friends. Wedge clapped Thane on the back, and Thane managed to smile as they congratulated each other on the walkers they'd taken down. But Wedge's face fell when Thane asked about Dak Ralter.
"Dak died during the battle. Their snowspeeder was hit. Only Skywalker made it out."
Only half a day before, Thane had been teasing Dak about hero-worshipping Luke Skywalker. Now Dak lay dead and abandoned on Hoth, his body crushed by an AT-AT. The kid hadn't even been 19 years old.
"If it's any consolation," Wedge said, studying Thane's expression. "Luke said Dak died from the blast, instantly."
"Consolation," Thane repeated. "Right." Wedge looked like he might say more, but Thane didn't want to hear it. He turned and walked through the launching bay,
watching the activity around him, as if he'd never seen any of it before. Pilots laughed and joked because that was how you dealt with unending mortal danger. You pretended it didn't exist. Only a handful of the rebels standing around showed any evidence of grief or shock. They were probably imagining scenes as terrible as the one playing over and over in Thane's mind. Sienna and Dak both dead, their bodies broken as they lay on the surface of Hoth. Soon they would be covered by the snow, never to be seen again.
Hey, are you all right?
Yender fell in step beside him, his blue leku hanging down his back. I'm fine.
If this is what fine looks like for you, I really don't want to see your version of bad.
Dekralter bought it.
Sorry to hear that, Yender said. He was a good kid.
Yeah.
Didn't think you guys were that close, though.
We weren't. It's not just Dak. I might have killed Sienna today. And I realize it almost certainly wasn't her, but it could have been her, and I'll never know. Skip it, all right? Yendor was smart enough to move on.
Consider it skipped. Come help me get the new recruits set up with some gear, why don't you? A couple of dozen of them were on their way to Hoth when the alert went out.
Sure, Thane said. It was something to do. He even had one pleasant surprise as he handed out helmets, blasters, and communicators to the rookies. A familiar face.
Look what the Gundark dragged in, said Kendi ideally, a broad smile spreading across her face.
Her dark green hair hung in a long braid down the back of her white coveralls, a few damp strands clinging to her forehead.
Thane Kyrell. Never thought I'd see you here.
Kendi, I thought you were in the Imperial Starfleet for life.
Shows how much you know.
Kendi laughed out loud. She seemed a little happier to see him than he was to see her. It was good to find Kendi again in some ways. They hadn't been good friends at the Academy, but he'd always admired her. In particular, he remembered how deadly she'd been on the practice range, how she could take down 3 target flyers per second with her blaster. The Rebellion needed people who could shoot like that. But she had been one of Sienna's bunkmates and best friends. Thane couldn't even look at Kendi without expecting to see Sienna at her side. Nothing much would get done that day except taking names, taking stock, and sweating. Echo Base Command Center had been hit, which meant disorganization and uncertainty had taken over. Several vital personnel were missing, apparently. Not only had Luke Skywalker failed to show at the rendezvous point, but the Millennium Falcon had gone missing also, with Princess Leia Organa aboard. General Ryken had called an emergency conference of the senior officers attached to this portion of the fleet, which Wedge got pulled into. That left the rest of them to fix damage to their starfighters, haul equipment into something vaguely resembling regulation, and wait for new orders and their next destination. So it wasn't that surprising when one of the transport pilots mentioned that they'd brewed a little engine room hooch. Making jet juice was one of those things the brass officially banned, but in fact turned a blind eye to, as long as neither the manufacture nor consumption interfered with duty. For the next day or two, before they migrated to their next location, they were as free from danger as it was possible for a rebel army to be. If the Imperial Starfleet had any idea where the rebels' rendezvous points were, it would have immediately followed them in force. Any good officer knew soldiers needed a chance to blow off steam, particularly after a big battle. So nobody said a word when the cup started being passed around. Thane gulped down his first so quickly his eyes watered. Whatever else engine room jet juice might be, it wasn't mellow. But as soon as he'd finished coughing, he held out his cup for a refill.
Hitting it hard tonight,
Yendor observed, one leck quirking inquisitively.
Why not? Thane said.
He didn't meet Yendor's eyes. It wasn't as if Thane never drank. He'd had a couple of cups of hooch on occasion, and he didn't mind an ale or two. Over time, he'd even developed a taste for Andoan wine. But heavy drinking had never interested him. Not even when he was a kid on Jellocan, and the other boys in his school would get completely wasted on festival nights. He had never even tried any inebriates before that evening in the fortress, with the flask of valley wine Sienna had smuggled in her robes. They had been no more than 14. Both of them had hated the sticky sweet stuff, and wound up pouring most of it out.
Her full lips had still been stained berry dark as she had rinsed out the flask, laughing, saying they shouldn't even have to smell it any longer. Sienna. Always Sienna. Did Thane possess a memory worth having that she wasn't a part of? Could he drink enough to blot out even the thought of her? Apparently not. But he didn't fail for lack of trying. Another drink, then another. Thane's experience of the evening became fragmented and surreal. He knew Kendi had told the story of how her entire patrol had mutinied on Myriaten, and how only one-third of them had managed to escape with their lives. He remembered a game of Sabacc, but none of the cards he'd held. Maybe some guys from Ord Mantell had sung an obscene song about the unique pleasures each species could provide in bed. At some point, Yendor had asked Thane whether he didn't want to lay off and go to sleep, but Thane had told his Twi'lek friend to mind his own business. When the room spun around him, Thane simply braced himself against the side of the nearest X-Wing and kept going. That was how he found himself, at some unknown hour of the night, stumbling through the unfamiliar base alone and trying hard not to fall flat on his face.
"Come on, you can figure out where the bunks are. They showed you earlier."
But his drunkenness had folded the strange corridors of the Mon Calamari ship into even stranger angles. The walls kept showing up where the floor should be, and vice versa. Finally, Thane decided sitting down would be a great idea. As his back slid down the wall, he felt his stomach turn over, a threat of what was to come. He'd never drunk to the point of vomiting before. That was not an experience he'd be eager to try.
"First time for everything," he thought in a haze.
Then someone helped him to his feet, a woman he'd never met before, or he thought he'd never met before. But she seemed kind as she put one of his arms around her shoulders. That seemed as good a reason as any for Thane to tell her his life story.
"I mean, really, I'm only telling you the parts about Sienna," he mumbled as the woman steered him toward the nearest head. "But that's pretty much my whole life. The good part of my life, anyway."
"Sounds like it. Here, sit down." She poured him into a chair. Thane let his head droop backward.
"I know I probably didn't shoot her down today, but I could have done it. Or any of the other guys, they could have done it. And they're on my side, you know? They're my friends, and we all hate the Empire, but if I ever found out one of them had killed Sienna, and it's crazy because, you know, she turned me into the Empire.
Can you believe that?
She gave me a head start, but she turned me in. Sometimes I think about that and I get so angry I could... But it still kills me to think about her getting hurt."
"Shh." The woman laid some sort of cool, damp towel across his forehead. This was the best idea anyone had ever had. Thane decided she was some kind of genius. So maybe she could help him figure out what was going on.
"What happens if... what if someday I'm in battle against the Empire again and I freeze up? What if I can't fire because I know Sienna could be in any one of those TIE fighters? What if I do fire and she is in one of them?"
Thane became aware that he was on the verge of tearing up and managed to stop. He might be sloppy drunk, but he'd be damned if he'd break down.
"I don't want to kill her. And I don't want other people to die because I'm afraid of hurting this one person in the entire Imperial Starfleet that I love."
"I understand," the woman said, putting a cup in his hands. "Drink some water. You'll thank me later." After that, things became even blurrier. At some point, Thane must have found his bunk because he dimly perceived crawling into it fully clothed, down to his boots. And that was where he woke up the next morning, hating life.
"This is where a lesser being would say, 'I told you so.'"
Yendor grinned as Thane leaned over the nearest bucket.
"Ugh, please shut up."
"Not until I tell you that our squadron has a briefing with the top brass in, oh, half an hour."
Thane rolled his eyes at his own stupidity, then winced. He hadn't known rolling his eyes could hurt.
Can you get rid of hangovers by dunking yourself in a Bacta tank?
Yendor considered that.
Huh. You know, that's not a bad idea. We'll have to test that someday. Right now, though, you're out of time.
Great. Just...